Welcome, players, to tonight's session of the Voltron AfterBuzz TV After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight's session includes fantasy, monsters, betrayal from all sides. Your charisma rolls last session netted you two very special characters that will be joining us for tonight only. Now, roll for initiative and form Voltron!
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV! And now, let the buzz begin!
I don't know about you guys, my initiative's a 12. That's not very good.
See, that seems pretty okay to me, because whenever I play any D20 systems, I always roll notoriously awful, unless I'm GMing, and then I have godlike rolls, so God help you if you're ever playing a game where I am your GM, because you will die, probably.
So your opposite will win.
Yeah, I have very good luck, but only when I'm GMing. If I'm playing as a player, I struggle with like ones where it's like numbers and very strictly math.
How about you, Megan? You're a rogue. How's the initiative?
It's either really high or the bottom of the barrel. Like, I'm yeah. either a master and, like, I can do all these cool attacks and flips and kicks and critical hits, or I'm, like, critically failing all across the board. And there's no in between.
There's really no other way to do it, though. Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. We are the AfterBuzz TV Voltron Legendary Defender After Show. We are having a grand old time with these episodes. Season 6, Episodes 3 and 4, Monsters and Mana and The Colony. I have with me Red Lion Emma Fife.
Yes, I'm back, guys. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Green Lion Megan Salinas.
Hey, guys. Ready to play some Dungeons and Dragons or Monsters and Mana?
Yeah. Blue Lion Alexis Torres and Yellow Lion Mark Donica are off in the Quintessence field somewhere. We're going to wait and see how that goes. I am Black Lion Katie Cullen running this show. And with us tonight, we have the executive producers and showrunners, Lauren Montgomery.
Hello.
And Joaquin Dos Santos.
How's it going?
Thanks for joining us tonight, you guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for having us.
We're always happy to be back.
It's really good to have you guys back, especially for these episodes.
Yeah, I was telling you guys off camera before this episode started that these are my two favorite episodes of this season for two very different reasons. Obviously, they are very, very different episodes, but I am particularly excited to have you guys here for the Monsters and Mana episode because I have been following what's happening on the internet, and I know that there are a lot of Easter eggs in this episode, and I'm going to need you to break them all down for me. So settle in, guys. We are not going to talk Lauren and Joaquin. Take it away.
I had a couple of friends point out two of them for me, and one of them is a takeoff on the Final Fantasy 15 cover.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's very good.
And one of them that I did not catch until my third time watching it tonight is that Hunk takes an arrow to the knee.
I lost
it. I was just how did I not notice that before?
And then he walked around town complaining about it for years and years afterwards.
Well, I was too busy going, healing arrows. I love it. I love it. For when healing word is not available. Oh my God, he took an arrow to the knee.
I used to be a paladin like you.
That's right.
Yeah. And then I died three times.
We couldn't work it in, you know, vocally, but at least we got the visual in
there. Sure, yeah.
Right, so for tonight's discussion, we're doing what we usually do. We are going to spend the first 30, 40 minutes or so talking about these two episodes, and then for the last bit of the after show, we will talk about the full season. We'll talk spoilers for the season. So for the first 30, 40 minutes, please keep the hashtag clear of spoilers, please keep the chat clear of spoilers, and please, for the whole dang time, keep the comments clear of spoilers. We're going to be kind to people who haven't yet binged the entire season, you blessed with incredible willpower. Holy cow, you guys.
That is not me.
Yeah. Nope. No. Night of. All right, let's sit down. Let's do this. And if you want to join in, we have the live chat and we have the hashtag ABTV Voltron. So let us know what you think. Let us know if you have any questions. Let's start with Monsters and Mana. I'd heard there was going to be a D&D episode, and I was telling people on Twitter to show me receipts because I thought that was too good to be true. And here we are.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of, you know, I think we had talked about it in the past. We've got these kind of bucket list wishes that we wanted to do in episodes. Lauren's was mermaids.
Of course.
Yes.
I had a big dream of doing a pro wrestling episode that never came to light.
But oh, D&D man.
D&D was another one. It was done so well on Avatar The Last Airbender.
It was done extremely well on Avatar
You can't
the
really top it.
Yeah. It's hard to outdo the boulder.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But D&D was right up there. And Mitch Iverson, who I think you guys have had on the
show
a couple times.
Yes,
Mitch. He is a regular D&D player.
Excellent.
And loves it so, so much.
So I assume then if you had this bucket list wish, if you really wanted to do a D&D episode, that you yourself have dabbled in tabletop role-playing games?
Yeah. You know, D&D for me growing up was like, again, it was like, there's a lot of math involved. So I transitioned over to Champions pretty early on. I had a couple D&Ds.
Sure.
And then went right to the easier math one. Yeah. I was like, I just want to make the characters and play the game. I don't want to think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mostly play Edge of the Empire, which is the Fantasy Flight Star Wars system, because right. I do a Star Wars RPG, and that has literally no math. It's just symbols that cancel each other out.
Yes.
It's that so is what I'm talking much about. Fun. Yeah. No numbers, just symbols. Sometimes you can fail and succeed at the same time. It's glorious.
Perfect.
So yep. I'm running a D&D session for some of my coworkers from my day job. Sat down last week with someone who has never played before in her life. Doesn't really know what she's getting into, but I told her, come in with a character idea. She's like, great, this is my character. Took us 90 minutes to build it. And she's like, I'm like, no, I promise. It gets easier. Putting it all together at the beginning is the hard part.
Yeah.
So I was very amused and very jealous that, here, make your characters. 10 minutes later, we start playing. How?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's what we end up doing now in video games anyways. It's like mm-hmm. when we played like the last five Mass Effects we
there's
play now.
Many of them.
There's going to be five at this point,
yeah.
I think.
We'll like create the characters, and then I think the problem is you make the character. It looks awesome. It's got all your specs, and then you play it in-game. You're like, that looks nothing like what I made. Like, reset, start
yeah.
again.
Yeah. Yeah. I have terrible anxiety whenever I'm making characters for mm-hmm. a sort of prolonged RPG, Mass Effect-esque mm-hmm. sort of game, and right. I spend forever creating the character, and then don't even get me started on how long it takes me to come up with a name. Like, it's just too much.
Always name your characters last. It's the worst.
Yeah.
I had to start Skyrim 3 different times. Because the first time through, I made a girl that I really liked, but then I realized, like, she was a Nord. I didn't realize you could press right and get other species, like other ethnicities. I was like, you have other choices? I don't just have to be frost power? So then I went back in. I was like, all right. And I found, I can't even remember what she was, but she was something else with a better power. And then I made her, and then her face was hideous. I was like, oh, you're done. Bam. And then I went back.
Dead.
I got to find a balance because this is just not.
I ended up with a dark elf, and she was weird looking, but I was like, you know what? You're my kind of weird looking.
This is the thing going with it. This is the thing, Lauren, is that you went down this path of I have this idea of something I want to be, and I want to try out different things instead of just literally being yourself, which was Shiro in this episode. Yes. I loved that every single time he died, he's like, oh, I just want to be a paladin again.
It's hilarious. And it's also kind of heartbreaking because if you look at this game, it's he gets to be someone that's not himself.
I know.
He gets to be this optimized version of him where it's easy to make the right choices and be good.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have to worry about memory issues and is he losing his mind and is he making the right decisions. It's just beat the monster, be good against evil. I can do this. I want to be a paladin again. It's fulfilling.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is heartbreaking, but also, my God, you're a nerd.
Yeah. And I felt, too, like, extremely in character for Shiro from the point of view of somebody who, as you say, Katie, just, like, had this opportunity to be the best version of him or what he envisions to be the best version of himself. And I think also he's somebody that has a difficult time envisioning himself being anything
other else. Totally.
Yeah. I also think of him as, like, the first timer. Page and Hunk have been doing this a million times.
Absolutely.
And this is his first time in this game, so he's like, well, what? The only thing I know right now. He's not, like, Mr. Artist Creativity.
Sure.
He's Mr. Soldier.
Yeah.
Totally. Not to mention how wonderful Josh's hero voice is.
Oh my God. I think yelling darg when he got hit by something is just the high point.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times we replayed that over and over and over again.
I need it as my text tone. Darg.
We can get it clean. We can get it clean.
I would appreciate that.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I'm just still laughing over everything.
For somebody who was playing himself, though, he came up with an intricate backstory.
He came up with the most stereotypical, hilarious.
That's what I also think is beautiful.
And they introduce him in the shadows like he's Strider from Lord of the Rings.
Totally.
Like, it's a full-on.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Absolutely.
And I think, too, that was one of the things that also that I enjoyed about this episode is it was playing into so many of those character archetypes that you see within Dungeons & Dragons, Lord of the Rings-esque kind of setting.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, you know, since the season's sort of aired, you know, at some point Keith gets a companion, and somebody compared it to X, Y, and Z. And I said, no, it's A, B, and C. Clearly the thing that came out in the 80s before X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Totally, you know. So I think we're even playing with those tropes and kind of turning them on their ear.
Sure.
This is like the purest version of that.
It absolutely was.
Yeah, Keith is a Pokemon trainer and everyone else is doing their fun D&D stuff.
Totally.
What went into choosing the races and classes for the characters?
You know, some of them just kind of fell into place. Like, a lot of it was us referencing, like, Record of Lotus War, where, like,
which
Allura
is so funny because I have literally been rewatching Record of Lotus War because we're covering it on an anime show that I do outside of here where we just, like, go back and talk about whatever anime we want, like you would in an anime club.
Yeah,
and we're literally talking about Record of Lotus War right now. So I think that I had watched this episode and then started my rewatch of Record of Lotus War. And I did definitely see the parallels.
And then Mitch was watching the old D&D cartoon.
Oh,
and
there the was 80s like,
one. I love the 80s
D&D cartoon. It's a fantastic
show. It was so good.
Yeah. It was literally like a Pidge character, but they were like the wizard. And so he had originally started writing it where Hunk was kind of the tank and Pidge was the wizard.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just go more with their personality types. So
absolutely.
I'm like, switch them up. Pidge is more relentless.
Yeah.
Hunk is more of the lover, not a fighter.
Right.
And so then we pointed him to Record of Lotus War for that the Hunk character with the little like
monk-looking
guy.
The cleric.
And he makes a good cleric.
Yeah. Mitch had not watched Record of Lotus War, and so he's like, oh my god, this is the greatest.
It's so
and
good.
When you watch Record of Lotus War, you see that they were playing D&D.
I mean, that is literally what it was.
What they were doing.
Yeah,
and they were like,
it was there in Japan in the late 1980s. There were literally magazines that just published D&D replays, where it was just a transcript of exactly what had happened in their D&D game,
totally.
And that is what became Record of Lotus War.
I know. It's beautiful.
And to me, I was like, okay, but this we should have paid attention in 1990. It was very clear that if people just started, like, recording their D&D games as a podcast or playing them on the internet, that people would want to watch
show.
That.
Japan was ahead of their time.
Yeah. I'm not sure Japan had the satanic panic, though. That was a thing.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is D&D didn't come to Japan until after the satanic panic thing was dying down in the US. Like, I don't think they had Dungeons and Dragons in Japan until maybe 1987, 88 or something like that. So.
But the 80s was when that was going strong.
Oh my god, Mazes and Monsters.
Or something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my god.
I saw that before I'm going on a weird tangent right now, but I saw that. I saw that before I started playing Dungeons and Dragons because I remembered hearing about sort of the whole satanic panic thing with D&D and seeing that movie and going, this can't be right.
I mean, I saw that after Big and all his, you know, huge movies, and we just had it at our local video store, and I was like, what is this? And I watched it, I was like, it was like an after-school special.
It is.
He loses his mind.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
It's a trip.
Yeah. I recommend watching it just because it's so bizarre.
I think I need to catch up on My Hero Academia first. I've got a list. I've got a list, and right now it's just Cutthroat Kitchen and DuckTales.
There you go.
Yeah. We looked at some Escaflowne was another one.
Escaflowne.
Like, at first I was like,
Escaflowne.
Maybe Pidge will be like a cute little cat girl, but then we're like, no, Lance is a cat boy.
Lance is our party tabaxi, let's be real.
Yeah, Lance is a little cat boy was very good.
Oh, yeah.
He was
a
cat burglar, literally.
Yeah.
But just, I'm not a thief, I'm a ninja. No, you're a rogue archetype.
Yeah.
You're a
thief. But I did really enjoy the... As just kind of going back to the whole like Hunk and Pidge thing and the idea that, you know, the Hunk character is so often subverting what to just look at that character you would think they would be. I did really like the choice to go with like the cleric. And again, it's like, you know, it's embracing these archetypes, but also putting characters into these archetypes that you wouldn't necessarily have thought of as being them.
Yep.
Right.
So I enjoy that. There is a very good question in the chat. At Flying Cheese asks, if Keith had been in this Mazes and Monsters episode, what would he have been?
There was some discussion about this.
And Christy's saying our character designer came up with a barbarian because he is very much like a berserker type.
Sure, yes.
You know, the temper.
Yeah.
And I think we were kind of on board.
Yeah.
Kind of like
letting that Galra side fly.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Kind of like Orson in Record of Lotus War.
There you go.
Yep. I like it.
So would he have also named himself Keith because that's what Shiro did?
Maybe. Make Shiro feel better.
I don't know. I feel like Keith might have been one of those people who's just like, thunderstorm darkness. Like she would have gone for
just
it.
All
like
out.
The early deep days level. Of, you know, your gamer tag, just like, oh,
he would have been the craziest dark edgelord.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, guys, we need fan art of this now. Complete with your craziest, edgiest,
which is
barbarian
hilarious
name.
Because
let's
one
go.
Time I played a character in a one-shot episode of the Star Wars RPG that I do where I was a terrible, bratty, like force-sensitive kid who was a mix inspired by Yuri Plusetsky from Yuri on Ice and Keith from Voltron.
My
nickname was Edgelord. So
nice.
See, what's hysterical is I'm playing a paladin right now in a long-running campaign, and so I'm just sitting here critiquing the paladin play like, excuse you, you introduce yourself as a paladin, but you don't introduce your god? Who are you?
Get it together, Shira.
You are a charisma caster. Be yes. better.
He's an amateur paladin.
He's trying.
He is. It's like, oh, I need strength. Charisma is my dump stat. You are a charisma caster. What are you doing?
I will say I will never forget the day that it became clear that this episode was going to be part of the season and there was really going to be a D&D episode. And we started seeing the artwork of all of the characters in their various D&D classes. And I remember that day my entire Twitter timeline exploded with fan art of Princess Keith. And and it's because AJ tweeted something about it. Like, it really got
out of
control.
It's its own life at this point. Yeah, it's got a life of its own.
AJ is really good at grabbing the fandom by the reins and just... there's a hashtag that's a discussion we need to have in about 20 minutes.
Yes.
What? And Sins in Twitter says, so Keith confirmed Reaper main? Got it.
So yes! Something kind of meta about this episode, from a meta perspective that's kind of fun to explore, is that this is all a story out of Karan's imagination.
Yes!
Yeah. Karan is a great DM.
He is a very good DM.
He's also the kind that will murder you if your saving throws are bad enough, as we see with Jiro.
That's right.
But Jiro survived.
And I loved, too, that, as you say, he was so sinister and set it up with the whole thing of the guy at the bar, and it turned out that he was really the bad guy.
That's right.
Because I, as a GM, have totally done stuff like that before, so I really enjoyed that about him quite a lot.
Well, as you do.
Yeah. And I also enjoyed, I have seen the screen cap where it shows you guys, as well as many other people that work on the Voltron staff as characters at the bar.
Yeah, that was our director.
That was all Steve, yeah.
He put that in the storyboard, and then it made it all the way through the character design.
Amazing.
Another little known fact is that Steve did literally himself all the artwork for Shiro's manga flashback.
Oh, cool.
That's
nice.
That's all his hand-drawn art. Mm-hmm. And you can see it. It's hard to see because it's super dark, but our character designer is slowly drawing her sword. She's up on the wall.
Yeah,
that was amazing.
There was definitely a blade noise going on, and it's oh, yeah, we just walked into a tavern, didn't we? Oh, my God, they meet in a tavern.
That's right.
I loved, too, the pixelated part that happened in the tavern that looked kind of like Suikoden.
Totally.
You know?
That was exactly the direction.
Yeah.
With, I love that game so
Michael
much.
Ozzie.
Right.
Yep. Worthy. From Brussels?
Yes. Yeah. And he also worked on the one where they played the JRPG, correct? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So good.
And there then the point and click combat later on.
Yes.
We, you know, I think that was also Steve Ahn's idea to go full Warcraft point and click.
Yeah.
And you can even hear the little mouse clicks going on.
Yeah, it was either Steve or it was Sukjin.
Oh, it might have been Sukjin. Yeah, that's right. We just love this episode.
There's so much. There's so much fun.
There's almost
Steve
too much.
Steve threw a ton into it. He did a bunch on his own. All of those kind of game cover references in the montage was Steve finding a different game cover for each one.
Although we definitely pointed him to Chrono Trigger specifically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chrono Trigger was
I loved Chrono Trigger.
Oh,
so good.
Do you guys have a favorite Easter egg out of all of the stuff that Steve managed to cram into this episode?
I think mine is probably just going to be the straight up cracking the vases a la Zelda.
And then having so funny.
The little blade of Marmora blade in one of the vases, which was fun.
And that also derived, I think, from there was a little piece of fan art online of two innkeepers cowering in the corner as Link was smashing their
faces. Yeah, a little wanted poster for Link. Yeah, just. It was incredible.
I think that that was a beautiful moment. The mount, the initial mount that they create is from Secret of Mana.
Mm.
the super yes. cute kind of
yeah. Falcor, the way you get those past legal is you don't tell them where you're pulling.
That's
it.
Right.
One Easter egg that didn't make it in, and we're so bummed because it's in the golden room with like all the treasure.
Sure, mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were gonna put everything. We were gonna put like He-Man's sword. We were gonna put Cinderella's shoe. We were gonna put yes. Aladdin's yeah. lamp, like Ariel's fork. Everything. Like I think even Sleeping Beauty's spinning wheel.
Oh my God. Then
the problem was we put like. They forgot to turn off the references on the side. They're like...
So internally, we knew what we were referencing. But then that made it all the way through legal. And they were like, wait a minute.
You can't have this.
And so we had to take them all out.
There's like two in there.
Yeah. I think there's like a potion. There's like Link's potion. We originally had like the fairy jar.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
There's a ton of rupees too.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we failed on that one. Our favorite Easter egg that didn't make it.
What
were your guys' favorite Easter eggs?
I mean, obviously, like, the pot smashing was amazing. And then when I figured out that it was all of you guys in the tavern. Yeah. It was, yeah, that was great.
that was fantastic. I really liked the moment where it went to Allura, the POV archer. That to me felt very Final Boss, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time.
Very much so.
So it just took me way, way back then. But also, my sort of kind of a fun nod to the original Go line, it wasn't necessarily a fantasy trope reference or a video game reference, but just Shiro reference or Jiro.
Yeah. Jiro's twin brother, like Jiro, here to finish the quest.
I shall avenge my twin brother. Yeah. I haven't laughed that hard since Space Hospital.
So. Right.
Oh my God. Yeah. Space Hospital was a thing of wonder and beauty.
It really was.
My favorite is absolutely taking an arrow to the knee because that makes me laugh every time, regardless of where it is. It just all the time. But I think one of my favorite moments that's less a direct reference to something and more a literally everyone who plays D&D has had this experience is... I really think my character would have thought to bring a torch.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Everyone does that. Yeah. I am the responsible adult. Why don't I have a torch?
And the fact that Corran is just brutal about it and goes, does it say you have a torch? Not? Okay, you don't have one. So good.
He's merciless.
That was Iverson for sure. That was Mitch.
Yeah. In terms of no mercy, I feel like we're Matthew Mercer and then Corran is a step above him because it's like, insane. Well, it was an accident and there are mice on the table, but you're still dead.
Yeah.
Now, did Rhys do all the iterations of Corran in this episode, including the big boss at the very end?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we pitched his voice for the big dragon, but they were all him.
That's awesome.
They were wild.
The Koranic dragon. You don't throw a level 1 party at a dragon. They won't survive.
Another thing that didn't make it through was the Koranic dragon was named after... What's the guy who invented Dungeons & Dragons?
Oh, Gygax.
He was a Gygaxian dragon.
Yeah.
And then, of course, legal searched that, and they're like, hey, you can't. And I'm like, all right.
What if we just mispronounce it?
Yeah. And the dragon looks... eerily similar to a Breath of Fire dragon, except with a big mustache.
Gigantic mustache.
Yeah. I love how every character he did an NPC voice for.
Even the mustache. Room, yeah.
And all the monsters, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the bar wench.
It was really brilliant.
There were so many great touches in this. The levitation spell being cuckoos, basically.
Right.
Shiro's dead! Ooh, rare drop!
Yeah, they were all excited after he died. Yes.
That's how you know Pidge is a gamer. Mm-hmm. Like, oh dear, oh hey.
Yeah.
Loot his inventory.
He's not going to need it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, if they drop shiny stuff, you take it.
Absolutely.
That's a headband of +5 charisma. You need it.
That's right.
And we love just the idea that his tuft was a headband.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was just shiny headband. And Allura's final mount, the Mer-Pegasus.
Yes.
Ariel colored, if you noticed.
Yes, I did notice.
The red mane, the purple horn.
Yeah.
Of course. Because we were like, what, is it a Pegasus unicorn? Well, you better make that thing a Mer-Pegasus.
That's right.
Let's just do it.
That was like Cabin in the Woods level of
yeah.
And I love that this was basically D&D for kids. Like, I can't wait to see how many kids are like, no, I want to play D&D now. Yeah. They did it in Voltron and it's cool. I don't think I want to be a paladin. But... They're more than just lawful good team dads, I promise. Sometimes they're lawful good team moms.
Aww.
Yeah. Was there anything about this episode that, like, the internet hasn't picked up on that you want to let them know, or just anything fun that you want to talk about?
I think they've caught a vast majority. I know they were going through the montage and trying to catch all of those. There's one, like, Korean ghost. She's like a fox, and she's got a very Korean dress that I think came from either Steve or straight from Studio Mir.
I think that's Steve. Steve and is then, pretty adamant about that.
Gosh, I don't remember what else.
Yeah, I mean, it's just chock full of love. Yes. You know, Coran's, like, sort of true form was definitely a little sort of orco slash.
Yes. And then there was a little bit of a, was it Overmaster? There was this one toy that was from an anime, and I think it's called Overmaster. I could be wrong, but I only knew the toy that I had seen. I'm like, that toy is amazing. And it's just this gigantic skull with like a robe.
Overlord.
There you go.
That's right.
And I kind of pushed that towards Christie's direction. And then I think, we just kind of like put that with Orko.
That's awesome. Well, and something really cute about this episode, too, is Lance going out of his comfort zone to try something new, and he and Allura end up having a fun appreciation for something they can bond over.
Yeah. I like that he says, I'll try your little nerd game. I mean, that's where he starts, and by the end, he's like ready for more.
I like that he was totally not into it until Allura's like, oh, play. He's like, just kidding.
Yeah.
And then he immediately committed to his character. Yes. Second she was in, he's like, okay, yeah, I'll play. And then he's like, this is my character, and I'm a ninja. And it's amazing.
I think you're very quiet.
Yeah. Had anyone just said, you can be a cool ninja sharpshooter, he probably would have just been in.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh, yeah. And how big is a D20? Like, dude.
And that's... Dude. Apparently a real-life experience that Mitch Iverson had with a friend of his where they're trying to explain 20-sided dice, and, like, his brain is just like, a dice, but 20 sides? It just gets bigger.
It's just exponentially bigger.
It's just a basketball. You know?
You stick 20 dice together, and that's not how math works.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes those real-life stories make it in.
Sure.
Oh, right. I think on that note, because I think everyone's got some really great real life stories for tabletop, but we do have to move on if we want to be able to cover, you know, this was our fun episode before everything goes to hell, and we need to talk about going to hell. But before we do, you guys should go to iTunes, which that may not have been the best segue I've ever done in my life.
I was on board. I was with it.
I got there and went, I just compared iTunes to hell. That's not a good thing to do. iTunes is actually really great for us. If you like this show, if you'd like us to keep doing this show for whenever season 7 inevitably comes out, if you want to help us keep wonderful guests coming in, if you want to keep us on the air, the best thing you can do, head to iTunes, find the Voltron AfterBuzz TV After Show, rate us 5 stars, because it has to be 5 stars, because you need 5 lines for Voltron.
That's a good argument.
You need all 5, guys. You need all 5.
Yep, you can't form it.
Subscribe and leave a review. Let us know what you like. And if you leave a review, you get a shout out on the show. We have anything new?
Are we
still scrolling down endlessly because iTunes doesn't believe
I've got like some June ones.
June 14th, I think, is the latest one.
Dope. It says, much love. It's from Gaming Comics with an X. I love to watch Voltron and listen to this. It's so much fun, and I can't wait for more. Sweet and to the point. I like it.
Yes.
And 5 stars. They know what's up.
Exactly.
Of course. Again, you need 5 stars for Voltron. So, yeah, do the thing. Win the stuff. If you are in an iTunes store that is not the American iTunes store, leave a review anyway. Screen cap it. Throw it in the hashtag on Twitter. Those still count. We just have a much harder time finding them. So, yes. Thank you.
Before we move on really quick, just AceTrainer44 on Twitter wrote, Joaquim and Lauren rolled a 1 for deception against the legal department.
Yes. Yeah, we sure did. That is true.
Yeah.
And you have such high charisma modifiers. Anyway, we need to move on to things being difficult. We had our lovely D&D episode as sort of the, this is our last little bit of fun before the rest of the season goes crazy.
Yeah.
And here we are. Let's Lotor. No.
This episode makes my heart sing.
I would like to tell you why I really enjoy this episode, and that is because I think it is very relevant to what's going on in the world right now, and I know how long animation takes to get made and how long ago this episode was written.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievably perfect because this episode is about a woman who knows that a man who people revere as a savior and their overlord and perfect is really a horrible person. Yes. And if she tells anybody, they're not going to believe her.
Yeah.
So it felt very, it felt very, very real for the particular weekend that it came out. And I just really appreciate how well written this series is.
Wow.
Yeah, we wish it didn't have such real life comparables.
Right, right.
But sadly, it does.
Yes, it does.
I watched this right up until we got the reveal. I was sitting here going, oh God, he's doing eugenics. Oh God, he's doing eugenics. Oh, he's just making the Matrix. That's not better.
Nope.
God.
Nope.
And that for me, like, we got this reveal and then we got the kiss and that whole thing was just like, I know so many people are like, I ship this, I want this kiss. And then by the time you get there, it's like, oh, I got what I wanted and it's not what I wanted.
It was like a monkey's paw wish.
Oh, yeah.
It's
you want your ship? Have some genocide.
Yeah, it's dramatic irony right there. You as the audience knows, but Allura doesn't know yet.
Now, so was this always the plan with LOTOR?
You know, a version of this... our first, I think, internal pitch for LOTOR was everything he says has an air of truth to it. Mm-hmm. So whether he believes it, whether he, you know, is telling some version of the truth, he hasn't totally lied. He just left out the details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that was another thing that just makes LOTOR such a good villain and rings really true about him is that, you know, when he comes back and basically everybody confronts him and, you know, Romel has told her whole story. They know what's going on. Obviously, they're waiting till Allura gets back because they don't want to do any harm to her.
Right.
That his initial reaction, it isn't really even to deny that he's done what he did. He's just like, you don't understand why I did the things that I did and why I had to do them.
Yes.
Ugh.
It's almost worse.
Yeah.
And the bottom line of this, and this is what really struck me for LOTOR, is, yep, he's definitely doing some awful things, but even if he weren't doing those awful things, there's a planet full of Altaians, and he let Allura and Karan continue to believe for however long they've been working together, better part of a year, maybe more, that they were the last ones.
Yeah.
He knew that wasn't the truth, and he continued to let them believe that they were alone.
Yeah.
That is the basis of this mistrust. That it's like, oh yeah, also I've murdered a lot of them. Like, ugh.
But the fact that his instinct wasn't to just be like, I'm gonna get out of here and try to like Splitsville, he tried to reason with them in a weird way. That makes it creepier.
Because you can totally reason with a guy like LOTOR.
Well, that's the disturbing thing, is that he looks at what he's done and he sees it as totally rational. Yeah. He's like, yeah, there was some collateral damage, but it makes sense.
A weird parallel to, you know, I don't even know if we've talked about it, but to Shiro and Pidge in the first season, where Shiro kind of gives Pidge this bit of dialogue where in war you have to make some hard choices.
Yeah.
And da-da-da-da-da. There was almost a weird parallel here with that. I could have seen that same speech working, not working on Allura, but LOTOR giving that speech.
Sure, absolutely.
But yeah, that's the danger with that sort of like the ends justify the means mentality, is it can be used for good or it can be used for not so good things.
Well, you know what they say about the road to hell.
Yeah.
I had a point and it died because I'm still, it's been weeks since this season dropped and I'm still kind of sitting here going, yeah, that happened.
I mean, even if there's a road to redemption, is there a road to redemption, really? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is there any coming back from that? Yeah.
Well, that's what the point I was thinking of. The way LOTOR talks about Altaian culture, it's almost like he thinks he owns it. Like, I'm part Altaian and I'm this, so I have a stake in it and all of these people owe their lives to me and I'm preserving this culture. Like, it's this really, really creepy sense of ownership that he is not in any capacity entitled to,
Another parallel to what is actually happening in the world.
And separating parts of the population and taking them elsewhere, never to be reunited.
He's that as well.
Yeah, he's very much in that mindset of, I saved you, so you owe your lives to me, so I will do with it as I please, which is not the right mindset.
No.
It's his mindset.
So getting to this season on Netflix and, you know, getting it released to the fans, how did you guys feel about fan reaction to this entire set?
This reveal.
Particularly this reveal.
These reveals.
I mean, go
for it. I haven't really seen, I guess, or been paying too much attention to this particular reveal? Have you seen anything?
I think overall, just with the season, this was such a culmination of so many storylines, Lotor's just being one of them. We felt relief putting it out there just because we had been kind of leading people along. And while the, you know, reception's been widely positive, there have been people that are just like, how could you do this? How are you going to bring him back from the brink of horribleness? And it's like, I...
The Justice for Lotor hashtag. Yeah. That AJ, did AJ start that?
I don't actually know. I don't think he did, but he's definitely been retweeting.
He's a proponent of that hashtag, but I also think he understands.
He just likes to start stuff on Twitter.
But AJ, as he was even reading the scripts, he was like, oh my God. Like, I can't, guys, like, what's going on? How could you? It's so heavy.
Oh, it's great.
It's really hard to find out that your character has done terrible things.
And that he's been terrible the whole time.
Oh, yeah, the whole time.
I just keep thinking of that Instagram story poll that DreamWorks did back at the end of, God, was it season 3, season 4? Do you trust Lotor? Yeah. It was 60% yes, and I'm looking at it going, 60% of y'all have been duped.
I couldn't vote because the way that the character was written, and also kudos to AJ on the performance, there was an element of, I was this close to trusting him. I didn't quite, but I was this close, and then...
We kept saying we wanted everybody to think he was Zuko.
Yeah.
We went full Azula.
Yeah. See, that vote was a hard no for me. Like, the other shoe was going to drop at some point. Yeah. It's going to happen.
But so, you're right about his performance. It's just so sincere. So you almost believe him.
Yeah. So I did not know this, Lauren, but Rin in the chat says that Ramel was your favorite character in the original Voltron series.
I think Allura was my favorite just because she was Lady Pilot. but Ramel was a close second because she's just another Allura.
Exactly, that's 100% true. So Rin asks, were you happy to get to incorporate her into Legendary Defender?
I always wanted to bring her in, like, ever since, you know, day one. It was just a matter of, like, where do we put her? Do we even bring in more Altains? Because this wasn't necessarily our story from day one, because we didn't even have Lotor in the story at day one.
Yeah.
But we knew we wanted to bring Lotor in, and then when it kind of panned out, I was like, boop, boop, we get Bandor.
Yeah, don't forget about Bandor, guys.
Oh, Bandor.
Oh, poor Bandor.
Was he also Reese?
No, Bandor really. I don't know the actor's name, but he's done, I think, some other DreamWorks shows.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he was a very kind young man. He came in. He did a great Bandor read for us.
And a super awesome weak Bandor dying.
Yes. Very compelling.
All right. We are running short on time, and I don't think we get any extra because there's someone in after us.
All right.
So
okay.
I think we need to touch a few points and then wander into spoiler territory.
Right.
So my notes just say Shiro no.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. But everything just goes to hell in probably 2 minutes here.
That's very true.
We have Shiro completely goes to the dark side.
But there were two really great moments involved in that. So first, was Allura deciding, no, Lotor, I'm just going to, like, real quick, like, suplex you. Yeah.
My notes for that just say yeet.
It was amazing. And then after Shiro does go crazy and they kind of realize, oh, we need to go after them with Voltron. And everybody's like, what is going to pilot the Black Line? And Keith's just like, I will.
It's like, who is such a good moment? Pilot the Black Line.
I know. Hello? But still, it was really nice to see, you know, cooler, older, grizzled Keith also show up and just be, like, real confident as a leader. Yeah. Oh, it was so good.
No,
see, and that Pidge moment where she can't bring herself to go after Shiro was just like,
I have a quick question. When Hagar fully takes control over Shiro in this moment, we get a brief glimpse of her, and it's Hagar as we've seen her in previous seasons, but the last time we saw her, it was after she had turned back into Hinerva. Mm-hmm. So is there something to that, like just the image of her in his mind is what she used to be?
She still has full control over her ability to shapeshift.
Yeah.
And she's still working with, like, a lot of Galra. And so I think she's probably realizing there's a kind of a safety protocol for herself as far as, like, who does she interact with, how does she interact with them. Around, like, the generals, she can probably be a Nerva. Around Lotor, she would reveal herself to be a Nerva. Yeah. But around, like, the rest of the crew, she would probably stay Hagar.
Yeah.
For the sense of
otherwise, who's this Altan?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It would freak some Galra out.
Yeah.
I mean, not like the Empire's in turmoil anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's a little, you know, Palpatine slash Emperor. Yeah. Hood on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Senator, all right. Sith yeah, Lord. Exactly. Senator, Sith Lord.
I think at this point it's about time to switch into spoiler territory. So if we can hit that spoiler warning.
Spoiler alert.
Wow. Official.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. This bit of foreshadowing that I absolutely loved in this episode. Zarkon fell prey to his own evil instincts. The Quintessence didn't create them, it revealed them. And then Lotor becomes a scenery chewing maniac. Mm-hmm. So I loved that. I love that we basically laid that out in this episode. And then, well, Lotor was kind of lost it by the end of the season.
Sure, wow. Yeah. Yes, but also, I do agree that there was some foreshadowing involved in that, but I also feel like Lotor, he was just always that person. And,
it, oh, absolutely.
And even if he hadn't gotten into the Quintessence, we were going to find this out about him sooner or later. Like, he already had that sort of sinister, manipulative side to himself that maybe,
but it was so nice to get the full-on ghost face scenery sure. showing. It was me all along. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think from a story perspective, for sure. But I think also, the guy's had a traumatic upbringing.
Oh, yeah. So
he's had
again,
some...
Again, it's one of those things where it doesn't excuse his behavior, right. But it certainly
informs it.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. And okay. I did love that we got to see his Voltron robot, which we knew.
Ever since we had a robot that looked like legs,
those
I'm like, oh, we made another
ships.
Voltron.
Yeah. Yeah.
So can we talk about like where the design for this one
came
from?
Oh,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, some of it came from budgetary reasons.
Yes.
We had like a certain allotment of CG assets that we can have. Our first was like 5 ships, 5 generals,
yeah,
evil Voltron. And then we're like, that's all of your CG assets for the entire.
Then you
like,
get no other ships.
Yeah.
You get
sure.
nothing else.
And that's for like a 26-episode block. It's we're like, oh God, we can't do that.
Yeah.
All right. What can we do? 3 ships. 3 ships? Okay. 3 ships. So, so it ended up being 3 ships. We had to kind of work backwards where you design the guy first.
Right.
And then you kind of take the pieces and you wibble wobble them.
Yeah.
You make it happen.
Break them apart and rejigger them.
Yeah. Christine Bien was helming that. Thank God for her. She came up with this really cool, like that crazy tail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we
were looking at just more Wraith-like, design.
Yeah. The tail was a little Dragonzord to me, and I really enjoyed it.
Right
I mean, yeah.
Got it.
Right
I think, what was the other one? Zone of the Enders was a big sort of point of interest in terms of its shape and
I can't remember that friggin' like dog man toy.
I don't
the
remember
name
that
of it.
I bought it.
But there's,
I bought the toy.
Right. We both have the toy, but there's some, I want to say it's some sort of Gundam.
Dogman Gundam.
Dogman Gundam.
Dogman Gundam.
Maybe it's
I like that.
I love the contrast of this because you guys talked about how Zarkon's sort of mech design was very loosely based on Epion. Mm-hmm. So having this one be, you know, a completely kind of swing the other way in terms of its design was really cool.
Yeah.
Very distinctive.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it was sort of, you know, the robot version of Lotor. You know, it was,
sleeker, Wraith. Faster.
It was a sleek and terrifying Simcorn. Robot.
Yes.
I also have to say that just talking about this next episode, we have to touch on Shiro, we have to touch on Keith, we have to touch on the fact that we just had 300 Shiros in reserve, because you need that many Shiros.
Ready and waiting.
I felt so validated.
At the beginning of episode 6, where it's, I've been dead for 2 seasons.
Yeah.
I had to stop the show and laugh and scream, and I'm pretty sure my neighbors thought I was dying. Or I don't even know what my neighbors think of me anymore. It's like, oh, Voltron drop.
I mean, this is the thing is, I also was of the opinion that real Shiro... If there even is a real Shiro,
he's dead. He's been in the astral plane,
in any form of recent existence. But I strongly theorized that he was dead. But I was still very sad when Keith was coming to that realization, and I really went on that emotional journey.
I think that's the thing. Even though you knew, you feel sad.
Yeah.
For you know,
I think
Kudo,
that was
the clone
about the most sad that I've been. since I thought Matt was dead I just was sobbing.
Yeah.
And it turned out that he was definitely not dead.
I just have all the wrong reactions to people dying in this show. I just sit there and cackle.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Bex's crying made you cackle.
I got spoiled for that episode by Netflix's.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So that was that. I got spoiled by Netflix itself, which was
the
fun.
Thumbnail.
Now, Joaquin, which episode did you write? Because you penned you penned
the big,
this one.
The big fight.
Dude, the animation in that fight was unbelievable.
Oh yeah, it was incredible.
And that one, you know, hats off goes to one, all the, you know, storyboard artists and animators, but Ki-hyun Ryu did a ton of work. All the stuff that looks super stylized, like when Shiro's jumping towards camera and he looks all, you know, kind of edgy and this style gets all crazy. That's Ryu.
Was he responsible for the beautiful shot of Keith's forehead that the internet's freaking out about?
Yeah, pretty much anything that looks like handsome Keith, that's all Shiro. That's all Ryu, sorry. Ryu.
Was the arm then kind of the impetus of Hagar's control over the clone?
Because the arm was sort of, I think at some point she would have, I don't know, wanted to do a full tilt boogie robot Shiro.
Sure.
Roby Shiro. Yeah. But that's as far as she got. And then she had to replant the clone back in the team. And If he came back with more than an arm, they'd be like, something's up, dude.
Yeah, just put all the clones together and form a Shiro Voltron. Yeah. It's fine.
We like to think she went through like a few Shiro clones that like fritzed out before she found the one that took.
Yeah. This one has this weird Swedish accent we can't explain.
Scrap it. Just shove it in like another realm of existence we're going to forget about it.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of Shiro clone pods just now floating in space.
Which is just creepy when you think about it.
It's weird.
So creepy.
It is. But I liked too that, I mean, that was the thing that I enjoyed so much about just the conclusion of this season, and it happened throughout the season. It was nicely paced story-wise. I felt that you got the payoff of a lot of things that we've been wondering since the beginning of the first season, and we got a little of the Keith Shiro backstory, it was all very, very satisfying.
Awesome.
Was that difficult, like knowing that you had to get all of those payoffs in one episode?
Yeah, more than that, I think the struggle was the stuff that people actually aren't really talking about was the stuff back on the castle ship. So it was Pidge coming to this, like, really, to me, that's almost as big as a reveal that Pidge had this kind of, like,
she's mercenary the whole time.
And like, she knew this might go down.
She's mercenary, and I love it.
Yeah. But that was tougher because that was like a big Scooby-Doo romp where they were like, originally they were like running from room to room and switching off things and doing things. And we had to pare that down, get it right to the essence of Pidge knowing the whole time.
Yeah.
Or having the suspicion the whole
time. Sure, absolutely.
Just preparing for the absolute worst and then being vindicated in the worst possible way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one of those times where you're like, why am I always right?
It's like, I hate being right. Yeah. I mean, I love being right, but I hate being right.
That's right. I think the only other thing was, I remember you maybe calling me to task a little bit we had this power core moment where they were like, we can't make it a thing. And I was like, why can't they do it? The power cores are, we got like 5 seconds of burn time. And you were like, what is this? And I was like, it's the reason they can't get to the thing. She's like, we've never said this before. Yeah. I was like, but they got to do it now.
Yeah, it was in the Lions. He's like, Lions now have power cores. Like, we've never had a power core.
It's like, well, damn it. They just got to get to the thing.
I was going to say, it did remind me a little tiny bit watching that episode of Galaxy Quest when they have to go through the things that like are like.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
This was a terrible episode.
Yeah, exactly.
The chompers.
Yeah, the chompers that they can get to like the core of their ship to reset it and save it. And Sigourney Weaver just being like, whoever wrote this episode should die.
Yeah, pretty much. It was that. It was like, what are they gonna run out of? Why can't they just get to the wormholes? Like, their power cores are running out.
That's fine. Yeah. We do have all sorts of questions about Keith going Galra during this fight. Is there anything you want to say about that? Or just like, y'all saw it on screen?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of happened on screen. I think he got pushed to that edge where that side came about.
Yeah, I think he's always kind of been in a situation where even if he was fighting, he was fighting against someone bad. But this was, like, the first time he had that, like, complete inner turmoil of, like, I want to let loose, but I have to hold back. And then, like, when he finally does let loose, I think he just lost control and, like, gets his galra eyes.
Is that the galra sound effect now?
Yes.
I love it. It's perfect.
Go.
Katie Fox asks a good question, I think, though, in chat, where she says, was there ever any debate in the story process over whether to kill Shiro forever, or obviously the way it plays out, he comes back sort of in a clone body.
You say that like killing Shiro is off the table.
No, but this is the thing.
You know me.
But listen, we know
in this moment
there's a lot more Shiros out there. It's not hard to like permanently kill Shiro.
Backed up to the cloud. It's fine.
That's right. Shiro's character story arc has, you know, sort of big. Internal, like a storyline of its own from within our crew.
Yeah. It was for sure discussed.
Yeah.
But ultimately, this is the story we got.
And we made it
the best we could.
And it's not done yet. So.
Yeah, it's not done. And there will be, I'm sure, once all Voltron said and done, we'll come back, you know, a year after, and we'll give you guys all the dirt on what happened with Shiro and how we came to these places with everybody.
Every version of every possible story we could have ever made.
I'm holding you to that. We'll book out 2 hours, and it'll be great.
The Shiro special.
All 300 of them.
All the gossip and dirt on Shiro.
Consider us the Korans of the Tortures and Mana episode that was Voltron Legendary Defense.
I love it. Koran for MVP this season. My God. Anyway, we're out of time. Yeah.
Well, can I one more?
One more.
Just highlight of this season.
Dude, I think just letting it all out.
Yeah.
Like, really just getting it all out. And now we kind of have, like, a nice little clean slate from here on out. Just our characters are going to be in a new path.
Yep.
Yeah, highlight has definitely been seeing everybody's reaction to all these plot threads coming to light and being tied up. Or being untied and let loose on the one of the
tied
two.
They're either being tied up.
Yes. Well, we're out of time for news and gossip, but I'm sure y'all have heard that there's going to be a Comic-Con panel.
Yay!
And the poster has been released. Let me know when you guys find Shiro on the poster.
Oh, it took me forever, and I laughed so hard when I found him.
I cried. It was so great. Like, if you're seeing this right now, cheat sheet.
It's like a little
bottom right.
Yeah, it looks right above the
bottom
logo.
Bottom right. He's in full on leave me here to die. Whoever did the poster for this season did an incredible job. Yeah.
Everybody did.
Yeah.
It was a thing of
wonder and glory. Yeah.
I had last year's poster, so I'll have to pick one up during San Diego Comic-Con this year.
I'm going to wait for the full everything because I've missed every single poster so far. So I've just got to wait. Anyway, we are over time because this is way too much fun. Thank you guys so much for coming in today. Where can the people find you if they want to keep up with you?
Twitter, Art of Lauren M. Instagram, The Best Lauren Montgomery.
Instagram, JDS_77, I believe. That's where I'm at. I don't know my Twitter anymore. It's gone.
I think it's the same.
Probably the same. Yeah. Sure, let's go.
24/7.
I think it's 24/7.
Yeah.
And is there anything else you're working on that you can tell us about, or is it just Voltron to the horizon?
Voltron to the horizon.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a blast when you all come in.
Thanks for having us.
Mm. Yeah. Emma, where can the people find you?
You can find me all over the internet, wherever Emma Fifes are sold, at my name, Emma Fife. You guys should... Next week, starting on July 4th in the evening all the way through July 8th, is Anime Expo here in Los Angeles. I will be hosting the live stream on Twitch, also on Facebook Live, and natively built into the Anime Expo website, so be sure to check it out.
I'm Megan. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin.
You can follow Blue Lion Alexis Torres at atorres890. You can follow Yellow Lion Mark Donica at Mark B. Donica. I'm Katie Cullen. You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. I will also be at Anime Expo wandering around. Find me. We are also doing the Rooster Teeth reviews show on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. And you guys have all leveled up. Congratulations.
Yay.
Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
I want to be a paladin again.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.